and a audaciously delicious hello to you from voraciously vivacious Vancouver, where the action never stops, even as we change our socks. This is Tom, bringing you the May 2011 issue of Tomicide Solutions, entitled, rather mysteriously, Two Business Development Diseases and What to Do About Them. Now, I know you're probably busier than a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest, but I also hope that you can find some time to read this literary masterpiece, and, well, you may even pick up some useful points in it. So, let's see what's in store. Do you know that Americans, on average, eat 18 acres of pizza every single day? That's almost the size of 10 soccer fields side by side. The other interesting fact about these 10 soccer fields is that they could easily be filled up with people who sell various IT solutions but suffer from two major sales diseases. One disease causes salespeople to piss off their prospects with their bully-like persistence, and in many cases, prospects just pack up and go to the competition. The other disease leaves prospects on the lurch as to what to do next. So let's start with the first disease that has been termed as the Texas Tower Syndrome. Rather mysterious name. It relates to the said event on the 1st of August in 1966 at the University of Texas in Dallas when Charles Whitman, a student and a former Marine, went on a shooting rampage, killing 16 people and wounding 32. He shot three of his victims from the university's tower and 10 others from the 28th floor observation deck of the university's administration building. This killing spree was the aftermath of Whitman's having murdered his wife and mother at their home. Eventually, he was shot and killed by the police. Upon some examination into Whitman's background, it turned out that his upper middle class family had serious problems, and his mother left her authoritarian, both emotionally and physically abusive husband, who demanded perfection from everyone in the family. On the top of all this mess came Whitman's personal issues, including drug abuse, extensive headaches caused by an aggressive tumor that was discovered during autopsy, court-martial, and last but not least, failing at his university course. And the way the Texas Tower Syndrome plays out for snipers is that once they start shooting, they can't stop. They take out their assigned targets and then keep shooting at anyone in sight. And this Texas Tower Syndrome has an implication in business development. Now, some may say that this syndrome can be a good thing in business development, calling it being on the roll or being on a winning streak. And yes, that's 100% correct. In that sense, it can be good. The shadow side of this is when salespeople just can't shut up and listen. According to Rain Today's report entitled How Clients Buy Benchmark Report 2009, the most commonly experienced problem, 38%, by buyers is that salespeople don't listen to them. This usually happens to contentless salespeople who don't have much subject matter expertise, who don't really know what they sell, but they make their quotas by bulldozing their ways all the way to their buyers' purses. These are the folks who suffer from the shadow side of the Texas Tower Syndrome. They keep puking their high-laden, bullshit-riddled sales pitches, and they just can't shut up. So do you recognize the typical car salesman? At least most of them are men or real estate agents. So they keep shooting their canned pitches and dog and pony presentations until either buyers buy or throw them out of their offices. But what do they teach you in peddling school? If you get thrown out through the door, go back through the window and continue as if nothing had happened. And now let's add some other commonly taught rubbish to the pie, like don't ever take no for an answer, and an objection is a sign of interest. Well, to me, they sound like the modus operandi of a serial rapist. But you may want to discuss this with some rape victims just to make sure I'm on the right track. Most salespeople, especially the ones trained in traditional high-pressure manipulative sales tactics, are so engulfed in their own sales pitches and they enjoy pitching their stuff so much that they can't believe when their prospects don't have the same level of enthusiasm as they have. Yes, let's be enthusiastic, but there is a difference between enthusiastic and enthusiastic. I think there is a kind of bouncing of the wall type enthusiasm and a kind of grounded enthusiasm. You know the former if you've seen motivational speakers or many business-to-consumer salespeople in action. And of course some of the so-called internet marketing gurus. In the B2B world, salespeople had better be a touch stoic to curb their enthusiasm, because too much of it can frighten buyers. Why? Because the buyer is about to make a significant investment, and in doing so, putting his balls on the line. If something goes foobar, he can get fired. So even though the buyer agrees to the sale, I don't think he's in the right emotional state to see the seller high-five his colleagues and celebrate the next invoice number as he reaches his quota. I truly believe that when sale is made, the buyer should celebrate more than the seller. When the seller celebrates more, I think there is a problem that can lead to buyer's remorse and the reversal of the buying decision in a few days. Why is this important? For the seller, making a specific sale is just one of the many successful sales events. Clients come and clients go. But for the buyer, the seller's solution and the seller's willingness to accept him as a new client can be the proverbial life raft to solve a crippling problem or to seize a huge opportunity. For the seller, the buyer can be the proverbial messiah. And this is why the buyer should celebrate more than the seller. When the roles are reversed, we have a temporarily docile and obedient buyer and a troubled seller. Why doesn't the buyer celebrate? Because he knows he could wiggle out of the deal in the last moment. And very often he will. It happens to buyers either because they are of the hesitating types that can't make up their minds one way or the other, or because they just want to milk sellers for information and then pass the information to their in-house staff for implementation. And why does the buyer celebrate? Because he wants to buy more than the seller wants to sell. Upon seeing the right solution, he's desperate for the sale to solve a problem or seize an opportunity in his company. So who does the Texas Tower Syndrome affect the most? Lots of contentless salespeople, that is, career salespeople who sell for a living and go from company to company in search of better compensation structures. What they sell is really irrelevant because they don't really know anything about what they sell. Yesterday they sold used cars in car dealerships. Today they sell condoms door to door, and tomorrow they sell, well, hell, complex high-ticket IT solutions. And they try to sell them as if they were used cars or ripped condoms, asking typical peddler questions like, and what keeps you up at night? And how can we get you started on this new system? Or what will it take to earn your business today? Or if I can show you how to, some benefit, would you buy today? So these are typical peddler questions. They bring out their arsenals of schmoozing questions, leading questions, thousands of closing tricks, and hundreds of objection handling techniques. They can't shut up and listen. They just keep firing, just as Whitman did in that university tower in Texas in 1966. And how do buyers respond to this lunacy? They chuck these peddlers out of their offices and send them down to the purchasing department where a salivating procurement agent is already eagerly waiting to crush the balls of the new vendor and squeeze the lowest price and best possible terms out of him. And as he's sitting in the hallway in the company of 20 competing peddlers of the same solutions, waiting to present to the purchasing agent, our hero realizes that the sale was basically lost, and deep inside, he starts singing a requiem for his lost commission. See what I mean? And this is a bit of a disaster. And now, let's look at the second disease that wreaks havoc among IT salespeople, the dreaded Munich Massacre Syndrome. The Munich Massacre has become the informal but commonly used name for the event that occurred during the 1972 Summer Olympic Games in Munich, Germany. A small group of Palestinian extremists, the Black September organization, infiltrated the Olympic Village and kidnapped members of the Israeli Olympic team. By the end of the drama, 11 Israeli athletes and the German police officer had got killed. But during the prelude leading up to the rescue mission, police snipers had spent a long time observing the terrorists, watching the terrorists' movements and behavior through the powerful scopes of their sniper rifles. The snipers had developed some kind of sympathy for the terrorists. Why? Because the snipers watch the terrorists from a distance and they know that the terrorists can't see them, so they are not in danger. But during the observation, the snipers become intimately familiar with the terrorists. So in their eyes, those terrorists soon become innocent people. So by the time the order was given to the snipers to shoot, they had got so emotionally entangled with the terrorists that they were unable to pull the trigger. As a direct consequence of this inability, the terrorists were free to kill their hostages, and they did. So, what are the impacts of the Munich Massacre Syndrome in business development? Who does this problem affect the most? Most career IT professionals inherently hate business development and look down on people who are so revoltingly low on the evolutionary and moral pecking order that they do business development for a living. And here is the split in the world of IT professionals. Some keep hating business development for the rest of their lives and rely on salespeople to bring them business so they can remain employed and paid. But some IT pros think differently and realize that in their worlds of complex, high-ticket business-to-business selling, selling is not about persuasion, manipulation, objection handling, and closing. They know that in that world, selling is really diagnostics, education, and facilitating the buyer's decision-making. So many IT pros decide to acquire industry-specific business skills that allow them to talk to buyers directly. And while buyers do their best to avoid salespeople, they are willing and eager to meet knowledgeable subject matter experts. Why? Well, simple. Salespeople are not trusted. Subject matter experts are trusted. But something interesting is happening here. Even if consciously IT pros embrace business development, subconsciously they still feel a bit strange about it. And when it's time to ask for buyer's commitments, they often miss the moment and don't ask for that commitment. So they end the meeting, the buyer is excited. Yeah, that's brilliant. Okay, it was nice seeing you. Goodbye. And the buyer is left on the lurch. Now what? What's coming? And very often, that was the first and last time the buyer has heard from the seller company. Let's remember that as technical professionals, diagnostics and education are in their blood. But they are not comfortable to ask for commitment. But this is not the peddler type commitment when peddlers are aiming for the sale no matter what. In that case, the peddlers just want to get their money regardless of how useful or useless their solutions are to buyers. They just want to flog whatever they are flogging and collect as much money as possible. Asking buyers for commitments is not about asking for the sale, but asking for a decision. Granted, hopefully after all the deep diagnostics and education, it's a yes decision. But we have to learn to feel alright even if some buyers decide not to go ahead. Can you imagine your dentist to be upset because you've decided to procrastinate on the root canal? Yes, it would be good money for the clinic, but she is not attached to the sale. She regards you as a person intelligent enough to make the best decision for yourself. And you know what? The clinic manager is not going to reprimand the dentist for missing her quota. That's a big difference. Maybe that's the reason why people trust dentists but don't trust peddlers. So, what is the healthy middle way? So, what is the best way to avoid both the Texas Tower syndrome and the Munich Massacre syndrome in business development? In the little drawing, in the written version of this newsletter, on the far left of the continuum, we have the sales pushovers, the Munich Massacre syndrome, the pushovers who can't pull the trigger, that is, can't ask for the commitment. They do brilliant diagnosis, analysis, all that, but can't ask for the commitment. On the far right, we've got the Texas Tower syndrome, the sales bulldogs who can mobilize thousands of closing techniques, objection handling techniques, and they just keep firing at the buyer. Come on, man, do something, grab that money, let's get started, ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. They just can't accept that the buyer decided not to buy. And here's the interesting dynamic. If you've done good marketing, no matter how shy you are and how scared you are to ask for buyers' commitments, very often buyers come down on you like a bulldog, basically demanding that you accept them as new clients. So you don't have to ask for the sale. Buyers ask for the purchase. And the good thing is when that happens, you can close the deal. You can have the project at your own fees. And at your own terms, you don't have to compromise on anything. You don't have to offer discounts. You don't have to prostitute your terms just to get one more client. Through your marketing, buyers know that you have limited capacity and there are only so many projects you can handle on an annual basis. Of course, buyers want to be one of the lucky ones to have the privilege of becoming your clients and the privilege of working with you. And at that point, you can play the Munich Massacre syndrome on buyers because they will be eager to play the Texas Tower syndrome on you, basically bombarding you with requests, please, 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 pretty please, accept us as a new client. Now, I'm an introvert guy, so are so many IT pros. And when it comes to selling, I don't think I'm the only one who gets a tad shy. So I can see more and more why I failed rather miserably when I tried to use the old-fashioned manipulative hard sell approach that I had learned from the so-called sales aces in the 90s. Then I discovered that the so-called sales aces hadn't sold anything since the 60s and 70s, but they had been teaching what worked for them 30 years before. Surprisingly, they didn't even notice that their methods got a bit obsolete over the years. Oh well. But with good marketing, even if you are on the far left of the continuum, which I am, you still wind up with some nice clients and lucrative opportunities. So in summary, the military has done extensive research on what causes both of these syndromes we've discussed. One account, Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman's brilliant book entitled On Killing, The Psychological Cost of Learning to Kill in War and Society. The author explains that the closer the range between combating soldiers, the higher is the resistance to kill the other person. This is why bomber plane pilots and crew members, although causing incredible devastation, have no resistance to doing their jobs because they almost never see the devastation they cause. They can easily end up with the Texas Tower syndrome. They keep dropping their bombs until their bomb racks go empty. By contrast, mid-range riflemen have higher resistance because they can see the results of their handiwork. And highest resistance to kill is in close quarter combat and hand-to-hand combat, which are fought in very close range with bare hands, knives, garrotes, and other devilish instruments. Although here the resistance to kill is overcome by the persistence of staying alive and fending off the constantly attacking enemy. I notice this difference in myself when I do my farm work. When I slaughter livestock on one of the farms where I'm actively involved in raising the animals right from birth, I have higher resistance to kill them than slaughtering unknown animals. When friends invite me to process their cattle, or Christmas pigs, or Easter lambs, I can do that at a pretty low resistance. Being an animal lover, and don't laugh here, because it's true, I still have some resistance, but my only concern is to do the work as painlessly as possible. And over the years, I've refined humane slaughter to the nth degree, so my process is very quick, very clean, and as painless as it can be, but there is still a little resistance. Research indicates that pain occurs when animals or humans sense what's coming to them. When animals can't figure out what's happening and the process is fast, the pain is negligible. Research done on sniper victims who were killed under calm and relaxed circumstances and didn't know what was coming indicates that they basically didn't feel any pain. Pain would develop and remain on the face after the body goes into rigor mortis. So have you thought about why certain dental clinics scare the shit out of even those patients who only need their biannual checkups, while in some other clinics even root canal patients are smiling? It's the environment. in the former clinic, the environment creates a psychological pain, even if the procedure is relatively painless. And then the psychological pain becomes physical pain. I don't know if you've had the opportunity to do fire walking. When you do fire walking, as they explained it to us, the pain is not caused, or the blister or pain is not caused by the fire itself. The pain starts in the mind. So this is how you can walk across, I don't know, in our case it was about 25 feet of hot coal. And in that group I was in, we were, how many, about 50 of us, nobody got burned, because the burning process takes place in the head, and then the brain instructs the body to respond to that burn. So this is happening in dental clinics. The environment creates the pain in the brain. And the same applies in the sales environment. Sellers suffering from the Texas Tower Syndrome create a painful energy around them. That's why buyers avoid them. But sellers who suffer from the Munich Massacre Syndrome can put buyers at ease, and if they just ask for commitment at the right times, they can produce amazing results. This is why shy introvert people can be amazing rainmakers in selling complex high-ticket services. And buyers will be eager to meet these people again and again, because they are not scared of them. Now think about your own salespeople's styles. Which syndrome do you think they suffer from? Maybe none of them. But if they suffer from the Texas Tower Syndrome, then take them off commission so they cease to be commission-chasing peddlers. Put them on salaries with bonuses, and base the bonus on company-wide performance, not individual performance. If they suffer from the Munich Massacre Syndrome, then get them educated in diagnosis-driven, as opposed to presentation-driven, consultative selling, so they have the expertise and the confidence to ask the right questions at the right time. It's not easy to find the balance between the two syndromes. It takes time and lots of practice, but as your people get better at striking good balance, you will see your margins climb quite significantly, and buyers will be eager to meet your people again and again. So think about it. Hopefully you've picked up some valuable bits and bobs. And with that in mind, if I live that long, we'll meet again in a month's time and discuss again something interesting. In the meantime, have a great week and month, and we'll talk a bit later.